the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This morning, we have a presentation on new programs and policies of the California Department of Toxic Substances. And we have with us this morning Chief Deputy Director Leonard Robinson. Mr. Robinson.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board and staff. I'm Leonard Robinson from the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. We're a department of the California Environmental Protection Agency. We probably have the biggest business cards ever because of our name. And I just wanted to come in and talk a little bit about universal waste and the management of it to strengthen the county and state relationship. I don't know the last time you've had somebody from Cal EPA come and talk to you. If you can't remember, it's probably been too long, or it might not have ever happened.
I think it's been too long.
Okay, and I sent letters out to all 58 county board of supervisors to come in and talk about universal waste and something called the California Take It Back Partnership. So I'm going to take you through a presentation, what we're doing, what we're thinking, and how we're working with the various counties on this challenge of universal waste. These are the universal waste that we're dealing with. They're household items, electronic items. A lot of you are probably too young to remember what that thing is in the middle, but that's an 8-track tape player.
I still have one.
What's that?
That's what I thought.
I used to have a 4-track.
Oh, well, that's how we do succession management at the state. If you had an 8-track tape player, you're getting ready to retire in the next 5 or 10 years. So we have, those that had 8-track tape players and those that didn't, you know. And so the two tests is if you know what an 8-track tape player is and if you know what an e-ticket ride is. Anyway, these are some of the things that historically have gone into the trash, but they contain heavy metals, arsenic, cadmium, lead, alkaline, and they can no longer go into the trash. And because they're different from your typical hazardous waste, your paint sludges, your oils, your degreasers and everything, these have more subtle approaches, and these are things that are used by everybody. On February 8th, the universal waste regulations took effect. The batteries, fluorescent lights, and electronic devices. They're less stringent requirements than hazardous waste because there's just a lot more of them, and it's more consumer-oriented than it is with businesses. Even though businesses use these things, the consumers are a much larger user of it. However, in 2002, households and certain small quantity generators got a 4-year exemption. Well, February 8th, the exemption sunsetted after much debate and contemplation by the state whether to extend it. We gave a 4-year exemption for an infrastructure to be in place. We figured if infrastructure wasn't in place in 4 years, a 60 or 90-day extension wasn't going to help. So we just kind of waited to see what the fallout was. And what we found is, as everybody knows, that the biggest polluters aren't businesses. The biggest polluters are your households, but households, you really can't do the enforcement. With the universal waste regulations, we're not going to be the trash police. We're not going to dig through people's trash to see what they're throwing away. We're going to try to encourage the households to help us protect the environment. Well, right now, the current challenge of universal waste, let's just pretend that arrow is a fluorescent light. You have the chemical industry that puts it together. They give it to the manufacturers, put the components from the chemical industry to the transporter, to the wholesalers, put it on the truck to the transporter. It goes to the retailer. Utilities are saying, yes, fluorescent tubes, best thing since sliced bread, go for it. So the consumer buys it and uses it, and everybody touts that these fluorescent lights last forever. Well, they do. Even when the utility goes out, the mercury vapors inside last forever in the environment. So what happens? The consumers use it, and then when it's no longer any good, it goes to the state and local government, more than likely local government. Your household hazardous waste people, your environmental health people, have to bear the brunt of this. So with no responsibility of the chemical industry, and the price just keeps going up and up and up. I had a talk with your director, and she was saying that the price is very, very expensive for fluorescent tubes. Well, this is the current challenge. The last person to touch these things loses. That's the person who pays for it. We got the mandate from the legislature. You're going to do something with universal waste using existing resources. It translates to the county as an unfunded mandate. And so what do? So what we're trying to do is push it, push some of the responsibility back to the utilities, the wholesalers, the manufacturers, and the chemical industry. But again, it's just not one entity's responsibility. This is probably the best scenario. Have everybody who touches that fluorescent light, the chemical industry, transporters, wholesalers, utilities, retailers, consumer, and state and local government, each one stakes a claim into the responsibility of it. Well, and eventually that's going to happen. Product stewardship, you probably hear about it on the national level and the state level. Product stewardship will be the key to environmental cleanup. But until that mystical, magical moment, we've got to do something now. So we saw an opportunity between the manufacturer, the consumer, or the retail stores. They're the ones that sell these devices, sell these things, put them out there, have them on sale, make it easy for the public. And then the regulatory choices to get these things collected, managed, are either incentive or enforcement, the carrot or the stick. However, there's an option. On Earth Day, we kicked off something called the California Take It Back Partnership. And what we're doing, we're partnering with retail stores, nonprofits, local government to provide locations for the public to drop off universal waste that's free, local, convenient, and did I say free? Because to get the public engaged, it has to be free. I mean, along with being a state employee, I am a member of the public, and I'd hate to have to buy something and have to pay, to do the environmental thing, the right thing, to pay for the disposal. So we've got a lot of retail stores that have stepped up to the plate. We've got non-governmental agencies that have stepped up to the plate and local governments who have stepped up to the plate and a utility that has stepped up to provide these for the household. The current structure is to have, in all the counties, having household hazardous waste facilities. That means people have to drive anywhere from 5 to 30 miles out of their way on a Saturday to get rid of this. Well, that's only going to get a 2 to 5% capture. No good. What we found is the public does want to protect the environment, but you have to do it in the stream of commerce. Either they're going to recycle at home, they want it curbside, they want recycling opportunities where they shop, where they work, where they worship, or anything else. On Saturdays, people are trying to catch up with the week. They want to do the right thing environmentally, but the 5 to 30 mile drive to do that is a bit much. These are our partners in the Take It Back Partnership. There's a lot more than I can put on the screen, but the first person to step up was IKEA, the furniture store. They take back fluorescent lights, they take back batteries. They were doing this even before we came up with the concept of the Take It Back Partnership. So I asked them, why do you do that? And the answer was, it's the right thing to do. So I looked up their company. I should have guessed, a European company. We're trying to, do you think Walmart or Kmart are saying this at this point? No, not yet, but we're hoping to engage them. Goodwill Industries has stepped up with the plate by partnering with Dell. You can't throw your computers away in the trash anymore. So Goodwill will take them. Goodwill will do two things. They're a certified collector of computers, CPUs, printers, and they'll take the ones that they can fix, upgrade, and help rebuild lives. And the ones they can't, they take the components apart, and they get paid a fee by the state to responsibly recycle the components, especially the monitors. But, a lot of people see Goodwill as a place to take clothes. Well, we had a roundup at one of our offices. We said, okay, we're going to see how easy this is. We went in, and we had a roundup of just the people in an industrial park at one of our regional offices in Cyprus. In 2 hours, we ended up with 85,000 pounds of computers and electronic devices. These are the devices, and cell phones. These are the devices people had in their garages, in their drawers, in, all kind of places, wondering what to do with it. I participated with Goodwill in San Diego, and they had a sweep, and an 8-hour day, 800 vehicles came by to drop off computers. So they're part of the partnership because, again, it's free, local, and convenient, and free to the public. Leader Pharmacies with the mercury thermometers. The University of California Office of the President, they're taking back batteries, cell phones, and mercury thermometers from their workers and from their students, and that's going to spread out to the UC campuses all over. And the UC are one of the biggest employers in the state, so that's a capture right there. Pacific Gas and Electric stepped up to the plate. They're one of the ones saying, hey, you used to say flex your power. Let's use these fluorescent lights. They last forever. Let's do this. But when I told them that the burden falls on the state and the county and the managing these fluorescent lights, they stepped up with the plate, and they're right now they're working with five counties to help subsidize the cost of managing fluorescent lights. They're working with Amador, San Mateo, Santa Clara, San Francisco, and Tehama County to subsidize, and they said they would work with all the counties in their areas, you know, their service area. They're going to work with the state to put public service announcements. I know when I tell people you can no longer put your computers, cell phones, and everything in the trash, it's a big surprise. People don't know. The interim step right now is in closets and drawers of your house, but people didn't know they couldn't toss the fluorescent lights into the trash. So the Take It Back partnership, these are some of our partners. We're getting more and more, and I'm going to ask you to work with your county health people, to work with the retail stores to take these things back. The first problem, the first challenge you'll hear is, well, it's a liability. All they have to do is go to our website. We tell them everything they have to do to take back these things, how to store it. They say, how do you store a used fluorescent tube? The same way you store a new one. There's really no change. The same box that you're selling in is a good box for storage. We'll help with the vendors to responsibly manage it. And then the Integrated Waste Management Board, who's also a partner, they've had grants. They've dedicated $4.5 million in grants for universal waste, universal waste-themed type projects. Now, they can't underwrite the disposal, but they can help get the educational part out. You know, everybody asks, what's in it for me? The retail stores, the pitch to them is going to additional service to existing customers, attract new customers. We tell them how to. There was a study done on the people that changed their used oil, and the average person that changed their used oil and took it to a Craigens auto parts store spent $60 in that store. Now, you take a small auto parts store, expand it to the size of a Super Walmart, Kmart, or Home Depot, and you have potential sales. This is part of the pitch that we're giving to the retail stores. The household, it's free, convenient, easily identifiable location, local location. They can participate in protection of the environment, and again, it's free. You have to say with the public, you have to say free twice. Is it really free? No, probably somewhere in the crux of federal, state, and local taxes. They're paying for this, but at least they don't have to reach into their pocket, you know, and trying to do the green thing and reaching in their pocket doing the green thing. So it helps them participation and protection of the environment. We have a generation of kids that environmental protection is not just a punchline. It's just the way they do business. So I think it's incumbent on the state to show leadership, and instead of DTSC just coming in and saying you can't do this, we want to work with our local county partners in discovering solutions for this. The government, it engages households, retail stores, and non-governmental organizations in environmental protection. This is a great way for state and local government to start communicating again. Grant opportunities, again, protection of the environment, especially in the more robust, the more aesthetic counties, because these universal wastes have stuff that can pollute groundwater, can pollute the soil, can cause illness. Mercury is one of those things that, yes, it does last forever. The tools for environmental protection, voting power, the law of supply and demand, purchasing practices, and voluntary partnerships. And more information, that's my information up there, but I, again, just wanted to come up with a solution. We put out this mandate. There was no funding for it, so there's a lot of ingenuity that has to be done. But as I run up and down the state, I found all kind of unique ways that the counties and the cities are working with this challenge of universal waste. And you know, I'm here to answer questions. I hope to periodically come out and visit. By the time I hit every county in the state, it'll be time to start all over again. As a result of the election, the director and I found out we can keep our jobs for at least another 4 years, so that's always a good thing. So as Arnold says, we're back. And anybody have any questions?
Any questions from board members?
Yeah, I have one. You're saying this, that you said free twice.
Yes.
Okay. So when you talk about your agency, who's going to fund your agency that's going to do this?
Well,
I'm just trying to find out, where's the money going to come from? Okay. It's free, but where's the money? There has to be a place where the money's going to come from.
Yes, and unfortunately, it's not us. We're told to do it with existing resources. We're We're the enforcement branch of the California Environmental Protection Agency, and it came to us, and you're going to do this, and you use existing resources, you're enforcing all the way. Right now, the counties are picking up the tab. It's unfair. It's not right to try to get money out the legislature, especially during an election year, to raise taxes on the state level. No way. But we do have partners. When people like PG&E step up to the plate and say they're going to work with the service areas, and we can get the Walmarts, the Kmarts, and the big box stores that, you know, we're supporting them with our buys and everything, we need them to support. So that's why this partnership is to get other sources. We can hit the legislature up for more money. It may happen, it may not. But there's some things that we can do right now working with retail stores and non-governmental organizations. That we're the enforcement people.
Okay.
You know, so that's, you know, again, if enough counties get together, working together, contacting the legislature saying, hey, we're hitting with this crush. We're the last ones to touch these things. It's not fair. You know, the message comes out. Ultimately, it's the Take It Back partnership will evolve into product stewardship where these things won't be so toxic in commerce. But for right now, you're already funding it with your household hazardous waste collections.
All right, thank you.
If you identify any way I can help, you know, I'm here to help.
Okay. And I want to believe you.
I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Any other questions?
I was just going to comment that I met Mr. Robinson a couple weeks ago at a conference in San Diego, and toward that comment about he's from the government, he's here to help, his background is particularly interesting in that he's not from the government, and he's kind of forced in this position. Maybe Mr. Robinson would care to tell the board a little bit about his background and the particular experiences that he can bring forward to fitting the current role he's serving in now.
Well, I've been with the state for 2 years. Prior to that, I was an environmental safety manager at a steel mill in Southern California. The governor, when the recall happened, the governor decided he wanted the regulated to be part of the regulator, somebody who knows what it's like to have to deal with the regulation. So I was an environmental safety manager. They asked me if I wanted to work with the state, if I wanted to work for DTSC. I said, I work at a steel mill. I'm an environmental guy. I already work for DTSC. They just don't pay me. So they asked me to come aboard and to, you know, again, I know what it's like to be told something by the state and feds, but no option, no money, no opportunity, no ideas. So I'm trying to work with that. I know what it's like. I've worn those shoes. I've walked a mile in those shoes. So I wanted to come back and take some of my experiences of industry, knowing that I'm here as long as the sitting governor's here. I'm not trying to make a career out of the state, but I am trying to make a difference. And I think this is one of the things that I believe in partnerships. It served me well in the private industry. I think it'll serve well in the public arena.
Well, any other questions?
Bet you didn't know California had a steel mill.
I didn't know that either. Thank you so much, Mr. Robinson, for coming to describe this. And I've been here a long time on this board, and I don't recall anyone. I don't know whether Sonia, have we ever had anybody here from his agency? The enforcement agency to give us a presentation?
Just as it related to the Western Star Forest, we worked, our department, Sonny Herzfeld, Director of Environmental Resources. Environmental Resources work hand in hand with DTSC on the cleanup of the Wesley Tire Fire site. And that's, to my knowledge, that's the only time a staff from DTSC has been before this board.
So I know you work together, but I don't think we've had an official from. You're the first one we've ever seen.
We're all on 10th and I Street in downtown LA, downtown Sacramento, on the 25th floor. They took all the boards, departments, as an office of Cal EPA, put us on the 25th floor, gave us one bathroom. Hope we talk to one another.
Okay, thank you so much for coming to this.
Thanks for having me.
County. Thank you. Next item is public comment period. I don't have any requests. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the board on any issue? Seeing none, we'll turn to the consent calendar. And on item C1, Supervisor Grover and myself have a conflict of interest, so we will be departing and turning item one over to the balance of the board. Does anyone have any other items they wish to remove from the consent calendar?
Okay.
Dan, do you want to?
No, I'll move for approval on the balance.
Okay.
Wait, we have a motion.
Not on the one you're going to address.
No, I did another one.
Oh, okay. You didn't tell me that.
Well, I didn't know it. Just more random.
C3, it's on the corner of Gear Road and Fox Road. The county bought some land from me, and our attorney just now told me that he thinks I should step down. Although the deal has been finalized, the money's been paid, and everything, I'll be more happy to step down on C3.
Okay, well, look, we have a motion for everything other than item 1 and 3, so can we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered. We'll take 1, and Supervisor Grover and I will remove ourselves, and then you'll get to...
Okay, I'll get to leave next. Okay.
I just had a couple questions about C1. C1 is the intersection of Albers and Gear Road on 132. My question would be, when the project starts, do you have a time when it starts and when it finishes? And if it's not finished on time, is there a monetary
delay damages?
Yeah. Okay, that's what I need to know, because a lot of, I'm not going to pick on anybody right now, but a lot of these projects, they go on, and they go on. And people begin to ask the board, how come it's taking so long? How come you do a certain thing, then it's another month? I think it's time now that when these projects come up, that we know when you're going to start them, we know when you're going to finish them, and if there's going to be some kind of penalty if they don't finish on time.
Diane Haunt, Public Works Administrator, and yes, they do have a start date, and we generally give a time frame for the project to be completed. We have in the past done liquidated damages or set an amount of liquidated damages. In the past, that number hasn't been very large, and that's one of the items that we're currently looking at, is the amount of liquidated damages that we would end up putting on the project if it goes over time.
Okay. On this particular project, then, what I'm going to ask is, if this project is not finished on time, what is the monetary penalty for this as we go ahead? So we'll know, is it $200 a day, is it $300, $400 a day? I just want to know, what is the penalty going to be on this project so that in the future, if these projects aren't finished on time, there has to be some kind of backbone to what we're doing, to say, look, you didn't finish this project on time, okay? And quite truthfully, I don't think the public should be put it out in left field waiting for these projects to get done simply because the penalty is too small. So what is it?
Let me check.
I couldn't hear you, but okay. You better come up here.
And normally the projects, they may have been low in the past, they've been different numbers, then there's somewhat of a formula that is used to develop that number. I believe it is $1,000 a day.
This one is do you know that?
But
do you know that?
Well,
is it $1,000 a day? Is it $400 a day?
It's $1,000 a day, liquidated damages.
And Supervisor Mayfield, we'll check on that number.
I can check on that just for a minute and find out for sure. But I believe that's what it is, and at that, a contractor should want to stay on the project and finish it. We have already discussed in detail among ourselves, as well as with Stan Reisman from the CEO's office, this is a high-profile location. A lot of people drive through there. It is not fair to the public to have to put up with. I think I know which project.
I hope you know what I'm coming
talking about as far as them not being done in a reasonable amount of time. Once the contractor starts it, they should stay after the project, get it completed, and that's true of all of our projects, not only the ones that have a lot of traffic, but with all of our projects. There's a specific time frame for all of our projects, whether it's 30 days, 45, 60, 70, 100 days, or whatever, and the contractor should certainly be pushed to complete the job in that amount of time. And they should be nervous about the fact that if they don't get done on time, the liquidated damages will be assessed.
Okay, well, but I think in the future, that the penalties, the monetary penalties, if you don't finish your project, I understand that this happens. I mean, it could be bad weather, you couldn't do it. It could be a lot of things.
Yeah.
And we can take that into account, and I can live with that.
And we do.
Okay, I know that.
And we do.
But the thing with it is that when the penalties are so small that where they can drag their feet and drag their feet, and I'm not picking on anybody, don't get me wrong, but if they can drag their feet, then that's the wrong thing to do. You have to send a message to say, look,
right,
we want this project done. We want it done on time, if possible, okay, within reason. But if you don't and you drag your feet simply because you're busy someplace else, then we better look at that.
Understood. Understood.
Okay?
And we can certainly pass that message along and make it happen. At our level, staff level, that's our job to do that.
Okay.
It hasn't been done well recently, but we can change that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I just appreciate it. Thank you. Now we need a motion to accept it.
Motion to approve.
A second.
It's moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. No.
Now you should step down. The other
I'm going to step down. Okay.
I'll get him back in.
Okay, we're going to take up C3.
Yeah, I'll move for approval if there's
any questions. We have a second?
Second.
Motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So ordered. Tell Tom to come back. Okay. We're down to correspondence.
This board has received the claims of note on the agenda.
Okay.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Okay, we acknowledge the receipt of these claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Excuse me. Do we have any board reports? I have a comment to make this morning in regard to the elections office. I read the paper this morning, and I hope that somehow we can transmit at least my opinion back to the clerk. And she has sort of abandoned the traditional daily updating of local close races, which has been done, as far as I know, as long as I can remember. And the reasoning was that it was too traumatic. I'm using my words. Hers were a little different. For the candidates to see the up and downs every day. Now, I don't think that's a judgment, frankly, that she ought to be making in this issue. It ought to be up to mature adults who ran for office and have been 12 months at this waiting for the results, and normally it's been a daily updating, and I think they themselves can deal with their own emotions on whether they feel this way or not. I don't think that's her place. And I would ask that she goes back to the idea of trying to, what does it take to update local races that are close? 20 minutes, 15 minutes out of the day to keep them daily updated? Jim, you probably know better than I do, maybe.
Just to, after the signatures are verified, they just have to be run through the machine, and it's...
And they can update.
The update can be done in just...
Well, I'm asking that, and if she has some different idea that it takes all day to do this, then I'll back off of this statement. But until then, I think that they ought to be providing... not only to the committees and the candidates, but there's other people in the community who voted for the candidates that would like to know what's happening. And I'm just saying that I think that that's not an excuse for them to be using.
I will follow up with her today.
Okay. Legislative Fiscal and Management Report.
I have no report. I would like to... to reiterate the announcement made in today's agenda, indicating that next Tuesday, November 21st at 4 p.m., we will be dedicating the 12th Street building and parking garage.
Okay, thank you. No other business before the board. It stands to adjourn. Thank you.